Okay, I am back with a special guest, and he is going to talk about something very interesting that I actually know nothing about. Say hello.
Hi, everyone.
Basically, we were just discussing what you were studying in grad school, technically. I think it's what it's called, grad school. And so, like, give me a breakdown of, like, what you're studying and what you're interested in and that kind of thing.
Well, I'm actually going out and getting my MBA, and you know, one of the focuses that I'm having is on how businesses can be more responsible in how they operate within the operations, as well as just how they sell stuff to people, I guess.
So you're it's like an efficiency?
It'd be more efficiency or sustainability.
Okay.
In that standpoint.
And so the part that I was actually really interested in was the sustainability part, because I mean, obviously, like, businesses now, like, they're like, oh, we got to be doing earth-friendly things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I guess, you know, one case that we studied, which was kind of interesting, was, like, the whole case with Nike. And they have a lot of people don't know is that they have a line called the Considered Line, which uses, more earth-friendly materials, or they'll source the materials within 200 miles of where they're actually made. They'll use less solvents. But at the same time, you know, it's a performance market. It's a retailer that sells performance gear.
Right.
And how do you sell sustainability with performance? And it's tough. And it's, you know, if you look at Nike, they don't really market it because they don't know what to do with it
yet. I've never heard of it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just one of those things out there that, yeah, it's out there, and they're trying to get all their shoes and all their apparel to do this kind of method of production, but, you know, no one's really heard of it.
And so, hypothetically, your job would be to go into a company and do... And show them what to do, or lead them in the direction, or, like, sort of bring people together. Like, okay, you guys have a need for sustainability practices. I know this company that does this.
Well, there's a lot of different options. One is, just taking the whole systems approach of looking at, okay, what are their inputs, what are their outputs, and if they do have any outputs that, you know, that they don't use, who else could use it? There's a lot of, firms out there that, let's say they'll recycle paper, and one of the outputs that they get from recycling paper, they, you know, can be used for farming. So how can that connection be made with farmers? Or let's say, you know, some of the companies that don't have a take back program, like, how can they take back certain programs, certain items that they sell to consumers, and what they can kind of do with that?
Okay, so I mean, how many people are studying this right now?
The number's been growing in terms of, you know, how many people are interested in it. I think if you look at, you flip through a magazine, and you'll get bombarded with a lot of companies that say, oh, we're green, we're sustainable, we're doing this, we're doing that. But it's also, you know, it's also, what exactly are they doing? Are people looking through, you know, their CSR report, or, you know, their responsibility report, and seeing what they're actually doing? So, you know, a lot of companies have something in the back burner that they want to do.
Yeah.
But they just haven't really gone about looking at it yet.
And I had no idea that you previously had an interest in this kind of thing. And I've known you for a while. But I guess I was curious how you sort of got thinking about it and got into this. I mean, I know a lot of people who've gotten MBAs, but they're like, I want to make more money. You know, whatever. So it's like, I feel like this is kind of a very unique situation. So I was curious.
Well, I think, you know, back in my old job, it's just, you know, I felt like I was kind of just going through the motions and just like, oh yeah, it's a job, and I'm going to do whatever I can and do the financials and the accounting and whatnot and understand the business a little bit. But there's also opportunity there for a lot of the companies, because, you know, there's a lot of waste being generated through their electricity usage or their paper usage or their waste usage, etc. And there's potential savings there from their standpoint. Okay. But also from a standpoint of looking at it from just using less resources, you know, just being able to do the same with less is always a good thing.
Are there fellow students that are studying this in your program?
Yes.
Yes.
So there's a couple of classes that I've taken that, you know, kind of deal with some of the sustainable practices within certain businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the class is, you know, there was about 80 people this past semester that took the class. That's a pretty good number in terms of, you know, how many people are interested in it. Yeah. It's a class that's been, you know, growing, and a lot of speakers have been coming in just kind of talking about what they've done.
Like your, I mean, if it feels like to me that it's a very timely thing that you guys are doing, and you will be upon your graduation, like on the cutting edge of this kind of thing, right?
That's what we hope. I know a lot of other programs in the country have a 3-year degree also,
mm-hmm.
that kind of combines an MBA as well as a master's in environmental science.
Yeah.
There's a couple of programs out there that do that as well. So you kind of get the two degrees at the same time.
So, what is this job called?
There's a couple of different titles. I know there's the position at Staples and Starbucks. I think they call it the Vice President of Environmental Affairs, I believe.
Affairs.
Yeah. Okay. I wish I had the card, but yeah, there's some departments or some companies out there that actually have a specific role that kind of look at some of the opportunities within this type of this work.
I feel like what we were talking about actually before was that this kind of thing, you have to look for specific company sizes that would be able to support this position, right?
Yes.
Because it's too small a company, like they have, you know, 10 people. This is such a specific role that they might not be able to support that staff number or whatever it may be. So if that being the case, do you think that you need to, like, we're in San Francisco now, so San Francisco is going to be a better place to look for that kind of job, or is, like, everybody sort of interested in it and you could hypothetically just find the right size company and then see if they have that sort of position available?
You know, I think a lot of companies have an interest in it. I just don't know if they have the resources and are willing to kind of put the money where the mouth is, I guess you can say that.
Yeah.
You know, coming from a smaller organization, a startup from a company, I think it was not on the front of their mind. It was just not an issue, really. It was just something it was like, oh, yeah, you know, if it happens, it happens. But honestly, we're still trying to make it happen in terms of our own products and our own revenue and our own design. So that's what we're going to stick to. But, you know, with some of the larger companies that have a lot more, you know, options with, you know, their cash and their profits and whatnot, they are looking into ways to, you know, cut some resources out because, you know, not only is it good for them, but it's also good for, you know, the people who buy their products and, you know, some shareholders are looking for this type of program.
Do you guys ever study cases of people doing it just sort of like a PR move? I mean, I guess recently I had read an article. One of my friends, they work at a water company.
Okay.
And the bottle that they use, it's like a very thick, very like strong bottle. And they were like, the article was like, oh, you know, this particular water company uses 30% less packaging. And so, like, yes, it sounds great for the public and something they can market, but they still use, you know, 70% more than the average bottle or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or it's a case of they're actually reducing, but really it's a very relative thing. And it's not like they're doing it for them. They're doing it just to look better. Do you guys study stuff like that?
Yeah, there's a field of what people call greenwashing, which is, oh, hey, we're trying to be green, but we really aren't.
Mm.
And so it's along the marketing side of, okay, well, you know, we're going to try to present our company as a green company, but, you know, are people going to buy it? Are we really green? You know, and there's debate on, you know, what companies are kind of doing that kind of things and whether or not, you know, they are true to their mission.
Can you name names?
I know that one popular item that kind of had a, you know, a question of whether they're greenwashing was the Clorox Greenworks.
Mm.
You know, Clorox, you kind of think of a bleach company and just, you know, the dangerous chemicals that they're using. But, you know, they came out with a line called the Greenworks. And, you know, there's thoughts about, you know, what are they truly trying to do there? And, you know, if you look at, you know, the packaging on that product, you'll notice a smaller label of the Clorox sign. So there's some affiliation, but you try not to associate it exactly with, you know, quote unquote, the bleach company.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. Other industry, like magazines or blogs or websites that already talk about this stuff? I mean, there must be.
Yeah, there's a huge one called Green Biz.
Green Biz.
That kind of looks at, you know, a bunch of different, you know, green programs that are being done within certain organizations.
Okay. So I should check out GreenBiz.
Yes.
Okay. So you were telling me about a project that might be interesting or relevant.
Yeah. So the project was with the Environmental Defense Fund as well as Walmart. So basically, Environmental Defense Fund is a nonprofit that kind of works with a lot of corporations to be more sustainable. One of the projects that they had with Walmart was to, you know, look at the, I guess, risks and opportunities for packaging alternatives for a steel can.
Okay.
And so one of the issues right now is, you know, with the worldwide market demand for steel and, you know, China wanting demanding more, you know, what's the demand on, and the price effect going to be on it, but also what's the usage of, you know, not just the steel, which is a limited resource, but also the energy required to, you know, get the steel, heat it up, you know, coil it, you know, heat it up again, and just, you know, the amount of energy and, you know, weight of transport, et cetera, just to, you know, to sell a can of tomatoes or sell a can of soup on a supermarket shelf. Right. And so this is one of the studies that we worked on to kind of understand, you know, what options are there, you know, what is the actual effect of, you know, using steel cans, and, you know, what other opportunities are there?
What did you guys find?
We found a couple of different options. You know, the steel can is actually pretty interesting. It's one of those items that's always been on the shelf. And, you know, if you look in the cupboard of, you know, any apartment, any household, you'll find, you know, a super can in the cupboard somewhere. Maybe in the back shelf, it's always there, like an emergency kind of,
yeah,
I'm really hungry, what do I have kind of thing.
Right.
You know, it's been around for decades now. You know, there's been some improvements with, you know, lightweighting the steel and, you know, finding different ways to, you know, make it lighter. But, you know, right now there's something interesting called the Tetra Pak, which is...
The Tetra Pak?
Yeah, it's a septic carton. So it's like imagine like a milk carton, but it also has like a foil wrap inside of it.
Okay.
It does its job. Unfortunately, one of the things that it's not well at is recycling. It's a mixture of, you know, plastics, paper, and aluminum.
So you can't just separate out easily.
Yeah, it's hard to separate. There's not a lot of companies out there that are a lot of municipal waste management companies that openly accept it because they can't really recycle it. Mm-hmm. Whereas steel, it's easy. You just, you know, throw it in the recycling bin and they just get a huge magnet.
Yeah.
And the steel just goes straight up.
This is true.
And so it's one of those issues. It's, you know, there's a better option out there, but, you know, there's a better option in terms of the energy usage to make the package, but in terms of recycling the package, it's not really there yet. And so there's an opportunity to perhaps increase the, you know, the opportunity for people to recycle the package, but, you know, how do you kind of weigh out those balances?
Yeah, because it just came to me that I was reading an article from Fast Company maybe a couple of months back where they were actually talking about this, where in order to give businesses an incentive to sort of change their things, people have to, like, consumers obviously have to change their habits and just purchase certain things or whatever. I mean, is that something that you actually do now? Because you're so much more aware of this than obviously the average human being.
Yeah, I would say for sure it definitely is. I think when I start buying things now, I try to buy something of a higher quality and to buy something that's going to last longer. You know, I think, you know, with all the outsourcing of our manufacturing to, you know, China and India and whatnot, you know, we are able to buy things at such cheap prices that we feel no obligation to keep them for a long time. We feel that, you know, once we buy it and use it for whatever purpose we want to use it for, we'll just throw it away and not really think about what happens to it when we throw it away, how much energy or resources was used to buy the product,
yeah,
or to make the product. And so, you know, start looking at, you know, buying higher quality products and buying less of them. I guess, you know, just buying something that's going to last and hopefully using it for, you know, many years.
Let me ask you, what sickens you like the most? If you were, let's say you come visit me in my house, which you have, and you're like, man, like I can't, I wish this person would change that habit. I mean, is that something you're evaluating and already sort of like aware of? You're like,
you know, I haven't really thought about it as I look around right now. I guess knowing that you are, I guess if I can say, a tech junkie, I think one of the things that I've always had that I kind of grapple with is that, you know, technology is adapting so fast nowadays, but, you know, it's so hard to get rid of electronic waste. It's just a complete compound of a bunch of different things, and there's no real big answer of what to do with it.
Mm.
You know, I think that's the huge part. And like, you know, you'll buy a cell phone, and a year later,
I bought an $800 cell phone, and a year later, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, it's like, oh, you know, what happens with it? You know, some companies have take back programs where they'll take it back, give you credit, and they'll try to break down the materials, or, you know, they'll find some way to donate to a worthwhile cause. But it's one of those things, like, we don't think about what happens to it. You know, once it's gone in our trash bin, we don't know what happens with it, where it goes, if it's, you know, just sitting in a landfill somewhere, who knows.
That's actually disheartening to hear that my electronics are,
Yeah, you know, I don't know any cases off the top of my head, but I know that there's been cases where, you know, a lot of this e-waste would be going into third world countries, and it gets broken down for, you know, scavengers will look for, you know, important metals from it, and eventually some of the chemicals will go down in their water supply. And that's one of the big issues with it too.
You know, since I've been living in San Francisco, in New York is very big by this, where there's a lot of, like, you know, composting piles, and I mean there's more like a lifestyle, like recycling and stuff. And I'm not actually a very good recycler. I'm not a very good, I don't actually do that very well. I don't do any of those things very well, because I'm like, oh, it'll go somewhere. But I mean, that's clearly a negative attitude to have. Do you think that your taste on that has changed or you've always already been very aware?
I think I first became aware of it when I traveled, you know, almost 10 years ago. And when I first noticed the three kind of separating the compost, waste, and recycling in Germany, I think if you look at, you know, some of the European countries, they've been a lot more progressive in you know, their resource management.
When we were in London, we like could not find trash cans. We could find recycling shit. Like, it'd be huge bins, like a huge blue bin for like this, and a huge green one for this recyclable, but never a trash can. So we're like carrying trash carrying our little like Kleenex in our trash, just in our pockets all the time. So like, okay, so I guess that makes sense.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's funny because I was in Japan earlier this year, and the Japanese is the exact same thing. There's not very many trash cans, but, you know, they have so many vending machines out there that, you know, sell you beverages and, you know, bottles and cans, but you can never find a trash can. And one of the things is that, you know, they have a culture of keeping their trash with them until they get home, and then that's when they'll dispose of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's normal?
That's normal. It's just something that they do, and it's something that, you know, I guess their culture that they brought up in.
Oh, I get so annoyed. I mean, I guess that's what makes.
And they have a really high recycling rate of just their materials. You know, they're on an island, so, you know, they kind of keep everything with themselves. And also, it's like a job issue where, you know, if you keep it within the island, you know, people, you know, jobs are being secured by people who are, you know, sorting it and remanufacturing.
Like they'll, okay. So when you were in Germany, you saw this and it impacted you on a personal
level. Well, I think when I first became aware of it when I was traveling in Germany back in 2001, just because, you know, I've never seen anything like that before. And now, you know, you're starting to see it in certain cities, you know, in San Francisco, you're starting to see a lot of, restaurants have the, you know, compost, waste, recycling. And you're starting to see it pop up in a lot of different cities across the country, you know, that they're starting to go about this movement of, you know, getting some waste streams out of the landfill.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, we're not doing a good job, but people are starting to be aware of it, hypothetically.
Yeah. I think, you know, you can't get there overnight. You got to take baby steps along the way. It's just, you know, I think at some point in time, most people in San Francisco, you know, will get used to it. I think, you know, I think there was a law that was passed around last year where, you know, they made composting mandatory in the city. And, you know, it's just going to take time before, you know, people just become aware and used to the fact that this is just part of living.
Mm. Would you say that you are already an advocate, or that you are preparing to be an advocate? As in, you know, when you, I mean, I guess I'm saying advocate, like when you believe, I mean, clearly you believe in this. So at some point when you see people doing bad things, like you might, you know, you might talk to them or explain to them like, hey, like I don't, this is what I think you should be doing. You know, like, are you there already? Or is that somewhere you have to get? Even on a professional level, obviously you need to get there.
I think personally I've, you know, by no means am I the most sustainable person ever. Like there are some things that I do that probably that could be better. I think that, you know, but you know, it's just, it's a whole path, right? And I guess to answer, also to answer a question of, you know, people who are doing, who are like, let's say leaving a light bulb or just, you know, doing something different, like just running the water. It's like, hey, you know, just turn it off. Like I'll try to do it in a manner that's not, I guess not in a bad way, of not trying to yell at them or argue mm-hmm. with them, or, you know, be at like a forceful way to do it, but just kind of, you know, teach them in a way that, you know, the less resources we use now, the better, because we're going to be resource dependent. Well, there was a simulation that we've done that kind of said, okay, well, you know, put your information into this kind of simulator, of, you know, how many miles you travel, what kind of food, how often you know, red meat, how, you know, what size of place you live in, how often you fly, et cetera, mm-hmm. just to figure out how many worlds it would take if everyone lived the same type of lifestyle you did.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did the simulation, I think my number was like 5.8 worlds.
So 5.8 worlds?
Yes.
What does that mean?
So that means if everyone on our planet lived the same type of lifestyle that I did, we would need 5.8 worlds to sustain it.
What was your killer? Your flights?
Flights are a huge thing. I think driving and like how my living space was also a big factor.
Like you lived in too big of a space?
Yeah. So basically, I think, you know, even if we, you know, if one person lived in like a 600 square foot place, that's still extremely sizable if we were to put everyone in that same place.
I see. Oh, I see. Luckily, I live on George's couch. I'm like 10 by 10. I see. And were you high or you were like average?
I was, compared to the rest of the people in my class, I was about on par.
On par. Oh. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, the flights is definitely a big one because there's so much, you know, jet fuel being used to try to go from one place to another.
Yeah, I've heard that, like, one cross-country flight will negate all the carbon footprint stuff that you've been doing for the entire year. Is that true?
I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is.
Because it's big, right?
Yeah, it's huge. There's actually, I remember one time taking a flight out of San Francisco. There was a sign that I saw somewhere that says, you know, donate to offset your carbon,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was a very interesting sign.
Because it was like, you're flying so far and it's just going to negate whatever you're doing.
Yeah, there was one person that I met at school that lives a very sustainable life, but, you know, they'll take one trip to Australia a year and it's over. And like that totally skews their carbon.
And is the person aware of that?
Yeah.
Oh. How do they justify that?
You know, I think for them it's, you know, they try to make as many lifestyle changes as they can, but, you know, their one trip is their one trip, I guess.
Right. It's kind of like, well, at least I'm doing something.
Yeah, at least I'm doing more on other aspects of my life, but, you know, if there's a more sustainable way to get to this country, then I would do it, but right now there isn't.
Right. Do you have any final simple tips, perhaps, either for me personally in this space or just anybody?
You know, I think it was, you know, for me, it's, I think the simple ones that I think people have always seen is, you know, turn off a light, switch your light bulbs, that kind of stuff. But also just if you can be aware of what you're buying and if you can buy less, I think that's one of the toughest things is, you know, for a retailer that wants to be sustainable, when you really think about it, it's, you know, what makes sense is to have people buy less, but that doesn't make sense to their business costs. So, you know, if you can try to be aware of the things you buy and if you can try to buy less of it or buy a higher quality product that you'll use over time, and you try to cut down your resources that way.
That's a good one. Thank you for coming.
No worries.